potluck. I feel like it's been a year or two since we've had a potluck, and I am ready. Don't you worry. Some of you who have demanded that my wife and I make our chocolate eclair dessert for every potluck, we got it done. It's in the house, and you can get ready to enjoy some of that wonderful dessert along with all the other great food we're going to have. But remember that potluck isn't really about the food, right? Right? It's about the connection. It's about the fellowship, you know, so don't just make potluck all about the food. Connect with people, especially someone you may not know. Don't be shy. Just go and sit next to somebody you've never sat next to before and share life, get to know one another. That actually builds the body of Christ when we do simple but important things like that. When I first moved here 17 years ago, we had a church member who made his living waiting tables at a restaurant. And one day in conversation, he referred to something called Satan Sunday to me. I was like, what is that, Satan Sunday? And he said, that's what we in the wait industry call the church crowd who comes to our restaurant after church on Sunday mornings. They are the worst customers all week. He says they are petty and miserable and demanding, grouchy, and they are the worst tippers that we will encounter all week. Boy, my heart just dropped. That was like bad news. That's not really what the Christian life is like, acting and living that way at a restaurant. Not what the Christian life is like. Last week, Angie, who was our exchange student, you might remember, who lived with us for 4 months from the Canary Islands, had texted Diane and said, I want to FaceTime with you guys on Saturday afternoon. I was thinking, oh, she must have a big announcement. Maybe she and Francesco are getting married and she wants to tell us. No, she didn't have a big announcement. She just wanted to see us and talk to us, which was really cool. And it reminded me of my experience with her when she lived with us. Angie, you might remember, was an atheist. Did not know God or believe God in God, but she would come to church with us because she saw religion as just a nice family tradition, and she enjoyed coming to church and doing that with us. But one day when I picked her up from school, she shared some news with me that, again, broke my heart. She said, look, these Christians in my high school, they don't act any different than I act. There's no difference between us. And again, that broke my heart. The Christian life is not the life of an atheist, but sometimes people really don't live the Christian life, even though they call themselves Christians. And so I've been spending this time with you for several weeks talking about what the Christian life is really like in order to encourage us to live the kind of blessed life that Jesus describes as a life that is truly devoted to him. So last week we took a look at the sixth beatitude, where Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart. And the pure in heart are single-minded, singularly devoted to one thing, that being Jesus Christ himself. And so the Christian does not have two agendas in life, or three or four or five. The Christian only has one agenda in life, and that is to be devoted to Jesus Christ. And Jesus says the blessing of living that kind of life is being able to see God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. When you are single-minded in your devotion to Jesus, you see God everywhere. You see God in restaurants, with the wait staff. You see God when you're in high school, among your peers. You see God in the grocery stores. You see God in your neighborhoods. You see God everywhere because you are single-mindedly devoted to following Jesus in all of the details of your life. And it's a wonderful life. It is a blessed life. As I work with married couples from time to time, I'm often disheartened to unlearn that they have not truly been living a married life for a period of time. You know, 6 months, a year, some 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And sometimes I have to say, you know, you haven't really been living like a married couple for a long, long time, because that is not what marriage is really like. And the same can be said of Christians. You're not really living the Christian life. You may be legally a Christian or legally married, but you're not really living the married life as described by God or the Christian life as described by God. So we've honed in on these eight statements of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, which are given to us to describe actually what the Christian life is really like. And so this morning we're going to look at the seventh statement, which will not be easy for us to experience unless we have already experienced the sixth beatitude in our lives. You'll see what I'm talking about in just a moment. So the seventh beatitude is simply, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons and daughters of God. And so in order to be a peacemaker, you must already be experiencing peace in your own life. Because you can't make something you don't know anything about or have any experience in. And the only way we're going to experience peace in our lives is if we are pure in heart, beatitude number six. If we are single-minded in our devotion to Jesus Christ, boy, that stills a lot of storms in our lives because we're not always being pushed to and fro here, there, and yonder. No, we are single-minded in our trajectory in life. In James chapter 1, verse 6 and 8, James described Christians who were, he called, double-minded. And because they were double-minded, he says they were tossed in the ocean like waves in the sea, just back and forth. No rest, no peace, just back and forth, back and forth. And you may have lived your life like that or known someone who lives like life like that, just back and forth. You know, just depends on the time of the day to discover who they really are, because that changes over and over again because they're double-minded or triple-minded. But the Christian is single-minded, and that brings a lot of peace. You cannot be married to a spouse and alcohol at the same time and experience peace. You cannot put work and family first in your life at the same time and experience peace. You cannot live the Christian life and an immoral life at the same time and experience peace. It only comes when you're pure in heart, not morally pure, but single-minded in your devotion to Jesus Christ. James 3:17 says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving. So you get pure, single-minded, and then you start to love peace because you've got peace, and now you're ready to be a peacemaker for Jesus Christ. So I've got two questions for you. They're like soft-pitch, softball questions. Don't overthink them. All right, question number one is, what do peacemakers do? That's right, Joe. That's a hard question. Peacemakers make peace. All right, Joe, here's the second question. I'm coming, brother. It's just as easy as the first. What do war makers do? They make war. Okay, it's not difficult to understand. And so I want to give you an example from Scripture of what a war maker looks like and what a peacemaker looks like. The war maker we read about in Genesis chapter 4 is named Cain. He's a member of God's first family that began with Adam and Eve. And he gets really jealous of his brother, Abel. He is like eaten up with anger, jealousy, and self-hatred to the point that he makes war with his brother by actually murdering his brother in the field one day. Now, while murder is like an extreme example of war making, there are so many everyday other kinds of war making that we experience and that we witness as well. Many families are at war. You'll never know about it by looking at them from the outside in, but when you see them from the inside out, and most families today, somebody's not talking to somebody. Somebody's holding a grudge, resentment, hatred, and they are literally at war, sometimes aggressively, sometimes passively, in the weaponry that they use, but nevertheless, they are making war. We see that in homes, we see that in neighborhoods, we see that in workplaces. It is practically everywhere. I saw it recently on a video clip in a place that I shouldn't have been shocked. But the graphic nature of the video was shocking. Did you hear about the fight that broke out on a Little League baseball field in California earlier this year? 7-year-olds playing t-ball. The umpire is a 13-year-old. And a grown man doesn't like one of the umpire's calls, and he comes out on the field and gets face-to-face with this 13-year-old kid. Well, thankfully, somebody on the other side felt like the teenager was in trouble, and he came out, and that's when all Hades broke loose. You can see those little seven-year-olds like running for the outfield fence to get as far away from all those adults who were throwing fists, beating, and punching, and kicking each other. Now, how does that happen? I'm going to tell you how it happens, because it doesn't just happen. It happens when people come to the baseball field who are absent of peace in their lives. And when their own lives are absent of peace, the least little thing can set them off. A blown call can set them off. Somebody who cuts them off on the interstate can set them off. Someone at home who chooses the wrong word can set them off. But what sets people off into making war is the absence of peace in their own lives. That's how it happened in Cain's life. That's how it happens in our lives. So you got an example of what a war maker looks like. Now let me give you an example of what a peacemaker looks like from Scripture. In Genesis chapter 13, Abram and his nephew Lot have businesses that are booming. They are raking in the dough, but they're also just soaking up all of the natural resources in their locations. And so now they're competing for those natural resources, and their employees start bickering and fighting and making war with each other. And that's when Abram contacts his nephew Lot, and he says, "You choose whatever land you want, and I will go in the opposite direction." What is he doing? I mean, he has seniority. One, he's the uncle. Lot is the nephew. But he's also threatening the livelihood of his business. What is he doing? He's making peace. And in Abram's life, his relationship with his nephew is more important than his wallet, because he values relationships over money. He's all about making peace. I recently told a couple who were fighting quite a bit, you know, sometimes in your relationship, you have to make a choice between being right and being happy. You've heard this before, right? I mean, it's just, it's a real thing. It's sort of trivial because it's said so often now. But seriously, in relationships, not just marriage relationships, all relationships, sometimes you're just facing this choice. I can fight to be right, or I can decide to be happy. And if I decide that happiness is more important than me winning, I'll be more open to the idea of making peace in this situation. Peacemakers are interested more in making peace than they are in winning a fight. Who are you? Who would your spouse say you are? Who would your child or parent say you are? Your coworker? Who are you? A peacemaker or a war maker? I love the situation in the book of 1 Corinthians where there are church members who are making war with each other to the point that they're considering going to court to win. And Paul asks two questions. Why not rather be wronged? Why not rather be cheated? What? These are my rights. There is something more important in the Christian life than our rights. It is peace. And sometimes, if I've got to take it on the chin in some way, in order to bring more peace and less war on this planet, that's what the Christian life is really like. And it's that way because Jesus was that way. The ultimate peacemaker, he's described by the prophet Isaiah as the Prince of Peace. He just exudes peace everywhere and in everything that he does. He faces so many high-pressure, anxious moments in his life, and yet he is always as cool as a cucumber. He is always at perfect peace and distributing peace in every situation. Since the fall of mankind, man has been at war with God from Genesis chapter 3, and Jesus has been about making peace between God and man. Ephesians 2, 14 through 16 says, Jesus himself is our peace. And he put to death hostility by his death on the cross. He is the ultimate peacemaker. And if the Christian life is really about doing what he did and thinking how he thought, then our only option is to become peacemakers like Jesus was. Now, for a moment, I want you to scan your memory bank in terms of the Gospels and the lessons you've learned about Jesus, the things he did, the things he said, how he handled situations. And now I want you to see it through a lens that we may not see it through quite often. I want you to see his actions and his words as a vehicle for making peace, because that's really what he was doing in all of his life situations. He was functioning as a peacemaker. For instance, I know you're thinking, he healed a lot of sick people. Do you realize how much peace it brings to a person's life when they were once sick and now well? Well, of course you do. When the doctor comes back and tells you, hey, the x-rays are clear, you got no problems. Oh, you relax again, right? Or after surgery, the doctor comes to the family, says, we got everything, he's going to be fine. Then the family, just that peace. That's what Jesus was doing when he gave sight to the blind or cast demons out of the possessed. He was making peace. How about the forgiveness of sins that he gave? Like the adulterous woman. Look, sweetie, I don't condemn you either. What does it feel like when you have hurt someone and you're not sure they're going to forgive you? You got a lot of turmoil in your life, don't you? A lot of anxiety. But when that person says, I forgive you, this is not going to get in the way of our relationship, we're still going to do life together, you feel that peace. That's what Jesus was doing when he gave people the forgiveness of their sins. How about teaching the lost? Lost people don't know where they're going. They don't know what they're doing. So every time in the Gospels you see Jesus teaching people how to live, it's because they've been living upside down. They really don't have a clue. And by simply teaching them what life is about, he is like bringing peace into their lives. You know me, I'm a moron when it comes to being able to fix things. I cannot. I've got people in my life, thankfully, that can. And you know, when I'm looking at situations, and I'll just be honest with them. Look, I don't have a clue how to fix that. I got nothing to offer. And they teach me how to do it. Or what I like really better is when they just do it for me. Oh, there's just a lot of peace. So the other day, I'm pulling out of the garage, and I hear this noise. And I was like, oh, man. The day before, I put my empty gas container behind my car so that I would remember to take it with me the next day to put gas in it, because I'd forgotten for like a month. Because I thought, okay, I'll walk behind the car, get in my car, I'll see it, and I'll take it with me. Well, guess what? This morning, I walked in front of the car in the garage. And that thing jammed against my garage door opener, the sensor, and bent it back. And I tried to bend it forward, it wouldn't close. So I'm like, great, now I got to call the overhead garage door company, until my wife said, let me take a look at it. You know, she's the fix-it person. She went in the garage, did whatever. I didn't even go. She did whatever she did, and it is working. And then I had some peace. I was like, I don't have to fool with that, because I thought I was going to have to fool with that next week. That's what Jesus is doing when he's teaching people how to live. He's actually making peace for them. When he feeds the hungry, when he socializes with the marginalized, he is like making peace with them. That's what he does. And so here's the takeaway from the seventh beatitude as I see it. Peacemakers get involved in the lives of other people. You want to make peace. You want to be like Jesus. You got to get involved in other people's lives. It can't be done from the sidelines. It can't be done disengaged from other people. You got to get involved. And this is a hard one for us to pull off in our culture today, because we've like built invisible walls between where we live and where everyone else lives. And in our culture, there are mantras like mind your own business, don't get involved. And so many of us do not. People are seen as objects, not as people made in the image of God. And so we just don't get involved. But if you want to walk with Jesus, what the Christian life really looks like is getting involved in the lives of other people. Imagine if nurses or doctors or police officers or firefighters or teachers or coaches all said, no, we can't get involved. Your house is burning, but well, we can't get involved. The only way to make peace is when we get in the game and get involved. So before we read about Moses' call by God in the burning bush, in Exodus chapter 2, we're given three brief snippets of Moses' life prior to that, where he is actually someone who like gets involved. And so the first example is this, when we see an Egyptian fighting with a Hebrew. Moses sees this and he gets involved. The second example is when he sees a Hebrew fighting with a Hebrew. Moses just doesn't see it and keep walking down the road. No, he gets involved. The third example is when he moves to Midian, and when he arrives, there's some female shepherds at the well watering their animals until some guys show up and kick them off the well. And what does Moses do? He actually stands up and he gets involved. That's what a peacemaker does. I love these Jack Reacher movies. I don't know if you've ever seen them. I mean, this is a dude, he's just like, he's going to right wrongs. And he's just going to do the right thing and whatever it takes to do the right thing. And I love how the first movie ends, because he's fixed things over here and he's a drifter, so he gets on the bus, he's leaving town. And the scene, it's just so classic for situations that we've all been in. He's sitting on the bus, he's alone and he's minding his own business. And towards the rear of the bus, there's this dude who's like verbally abusing and threatening his girlfriend. And like everybody on the bus can hear it. And you can see in the video, you know, the faces of people, like the women, they're like scared and afraid. And the dudes, you know, are just looking at the ceiling. And this guy is like giving it to his girlfriend. He's about to wail her, you know, with the next wrong. And the movie ends, guess what, with Jack Reacher. He gets up off of his seat. And he starts walking to the back of the bus in their direction. That's what a peacemaker does. When someone's threatened, when someone's hurting, when someone's alone and doesn't have a friend in the world, the peacemaker gets up and brings peace. When a couple is fighting, when parents and children are going at it, the peacemaker in that home gets up and walks towards the fire. Not away from the fire. That's what peacemakers do. And so in closing, I think there are two areas of life every Christian should be involved in. The first one is the church. The second one is the community. Every Christian should be involved in the life of the church where God's people live. And every Christian should be involved in the life of the community where people who do not know God live. When I was a young preacher, in terms of the church, my greatest fear was there were so many Christians who thought the Christian life looked like just going to church a couple hours a week and that was it. That was my fear of like 30 years ago. Now my fear today is like the Christian life is like the church doesn't need to be a part of my life as a Christian. That's my fear today. That's what I run into a lot today. But if you give an honest look at Scripture and you read about all of the one another commandments in the New Testament relating to Christians and the church, you know that the Christian life includes involvement in the church, getting involved in the lives of other people who follow Jesus Christ in order to help them to experience peace like they help you to experience peace. Galatians 6 says, carry each other's burdens, and thus you fulfill the law of Christ. The law of Christ is love your neighbor as yourself. And you can't do that in the church unless you're involved in the lives of people in the church. There are thousands of different ways of doing this, whether it's baking a casserole for someone who's sick, whether it's mowing somebody's grass who's out of town, whether it's simply saying hello in the church building, tell me how you're doing. Thousands of different ways of doing this. Every Christian should do some of them and make peace. The second area is the community. Again, when I was a young preacher, you know, my biggest concern in reality was the church really didn't want to connect with the community. We had more of a, let's defend our territory, you know. It's us and it's them. And so let's just take care of us. We don't want them to rub off on us. And so we'll just do us and we have no connection to them. And you can't live the Christian life thinking that way or living that way. God says to his people, you are my ambassadors. You are my reconcilers. And God says, I make my appeal to the community through you who say, be reconciled to God. Let's make peace. So every Christian needs to be involved in his community, both informally and formally. Informally, like, be nice to waiters and waitresses. You know, treat them as human beings. Don't be afraid to offer somebody in the grocery store help, you know, if you think they're lost. Don't just, like, close your eyes, you know. Get involved. Offer a helpful word, helpful action, and get involved in your community formally as well. Find some kind of cause that lights your fire and donate some of your time and energy. There's like 1,000 different great causes where so much peace is being brought into the world. Yesterday morning, I worked with the Happy Feet program. We bought new shoes to kids in our local elementary schools who need new shoes. Talk about making peace in a kid's life. You know, don't have good shoes to wear. You take them in the store, you help them pick out a pair of shoes. And just whatever it is, they're like, just do something to get involved in the life of your community. And Jesus says the blessing attached to being a peacemaker is you will be called sons and daughters of God. You know why? It's because when you're a peacemaker, you're in the family business. And the business that God has always been about is the business that you are now about. And you are never more like the God you worship when you serve as a peacemaker, because that is God's business in this war-torn planet. May we be a church this week that's about making peace. May we be a church this week that gets involved in the lives of other people. And as you think about that or something else going on in your life this morning, if you need prayer or encouragement, or if you're ready to become a follower of Jesus Christ by being baptized in the Christ, we want to help you in any way. Meet me down front and tell me how, as together we stand and sing.